I'm glad to be here, glad to have a part in this program with all of you. Two announcements. Number one, it's great to be retired. Wonderful. Best thing that's happened since they invented socks. Delighted to be retired. All of you that are teaching in colleges, Bible schools, may the Lord bless you. Those of you that are doing full-time local work, hope the Lord will bless you. I don't want your job. Tom doesn't want your job. So it's great to be retired. Number two, it's great to be in the Church of Christ. That's God's people. That's our folks. I believe the Church of our Lord is turning a great corner. Twice this week, and the week's not very old, I have learned of elders in two different states that have stated very clearly, we're not going the way of change agents. And until elders of churches of Christ quietly, firmly, without any hesitation say, we're not going that way. We'll never get change agentry behind us. I lived through the start of it. It started in the 50s. It got to be big in the 80s. I hope I live long enough to see the end of it. But I believe it's great to realize that the Church of our Lord, God's people, are now aware that we must reaffirm our dedication to Christ, our devotion to the church, and the resolve of our hearts to spread the gospel to the world, to worship God in spirit and in truth, to teach young men and young women to be great Christians, and to work together as God's people, so that when this little day of life is over, we'll hear the words, well done, a crown of life you've won, the day of our crowning before the Lord. Those two announcements, no cost for them, just to tell you it's great to be retired, but it's even greater to be in the church. I appreciate this good school. I've enjoyed coming here for a number of years, and Lord willing, I want to come back again. I sat here this morning and thought about the faces that I have looked into just today. Some of you go back in my mind 35, 40 or more years. Some of you I met for the first time just today. I hope that you know what a joy it is in my heart to see you, be with you. I really enjoy it. I may not be able to call your name. I'm beginning to have that problem of forgetting. It has something to do with age, and I think I started at about age 5. But I see your face. I think of your life and your work. It's a real joy to be with you. Look forward to continued life here, and then someday it'll be great to be with God and the redeemed forever. Appreciate being here. The book of Leviticus is a remarkable book in so many ways. It's a part of what we know as the five books of Moses or the Pentateuch. It's a very beautiful book. The backdrop of the chapter we're going to look at, Leviticus 17, lies in the information concerning the place where the name of God would be called. The name of God, the name of the Lord, the name of Jehovah. The name of God was to be called at certain places. And these certain places would be where God would receive his people. He would come to meet them, and they could meet him. The book of Leviticus then basically has to do with how people can approach God. How do you get into the presence of God? Well, in the Old Testament, the book of Leviticus tells us a great deal about that. God was going to call his name at a certain place. And in effect, calling his name would say, I'll meet you there. You come to meet me, and I'll meet you. Over the mercy seat, what was called in Jewish writings the Shekinah, was where the glory of God would be present. And when Israel approached that place, they knew that God was there. He would not fail to be present. The only question was, will Israel be ready to meet God? That's what Leviticus is all about. G. Campbell Morgan, and I think in some ways he was one of the great expositors in general of the Bible, he says, and I think with a great deal of wisdom, that Leviticus can be seen in five great steps. Chapters 1 to 7 tell about the dedication of the offerings so that Israel can approach God. These offerings have to do with various sacrifices that would make it possible for Israel to come to God, to meet him. Chapters 8 through 10 have to do with the mediation of the priests. If you're going to meet God, and you are a sinful person, and they were, and we are, then there must be a means of moving from man to God, and there are the priests. Chapters 11 through 22 have to do with separating the people, separating them from various kinds of wrong. Various speakers have already talked about these. If people are going to come into the presence of God, they've got to be separated from evil. God won't tolerate that. You're not going to come into the presence of God with soiled hands and an evil heart. That's not going to happen. So in 11 through 22, how are the people to maintain the purity and separateness from sin so that they can approach God? And then in 23 to 24, discussion of the feasts, the consecrations that declare the blessings of Israel when they approach God. These great feasts were celebrations. They were rejoicing that they were the people of God. Oh, there was an element of submission, oh, to be true. But they were joyous occasions. Why? Because we come into the presence of our God. And then chapters 25 through 27 have to do with the glorification of Israel's knowledge of God, expressed in matters concerning the land, the ownership of land, the redemption of land, the vows, and all of these activities that have to do with glorifying God because they are his people and they can come into his presence. And that's a great thing to think about. Many of you recall our good friend, Franklin Kemp. He loved to talk about whatever book he is supposed to be talking about. But one of the great books in his study was the book of Leviticus. He loved to talk about the sacrifices. Well, here are these five great divisions of the book, and we're concerned with one chapter, a chapter that has to do with what we're calling the separation of the people. If they're going to approach God, they've got to come and come in the prescribed way. And that brings us to what we call the place and the prohibitions. Now think about that topic for a moment, the place. If you're going to come to God, where are you going to do it? On top of a hill or by a creek? In a cave? How are you going to do it? The only place where anybody could come to God is where God told them to be. If you're going to come, therefore, into the presence of God, you've got to do it as He said. Because if God is not where Israel attempts to worship, then the worship will not be proper. So the place. And then the prohibitions. Few of them, we'll say a bit about them. But that becomes an interesting thing to think about in the very nature of matters. The prohibitions are negative things. God knows man's nature. And in knowing the nature of man, He knew that there were some things that if He didn't tell people better, they'd just go ahead and do it. Not necessarily because they were mean folks. They would do these things because they were weak people. Get discouraged. Get tired. So if you don't ever get discouraged and you don't ever get tired and you don't ever get out of sorts, you don't need any prohibitions. But if you tell me that you don't ever get out of sorts or get discouraged or just get cantankerous, I'm a little nervous about you. So God knew these folks. And not only if they're going to come to God, but they have to come to Him where He is. But He says, now there's some things that you just can't do. And if you set out to do these things, then you and I are not going to get together. It's just that way. Now, I'll jump ahead and make the observation that the place, if you will, wherein we come to God is the church. And the person that says, well, I can serve God as well in the church as out of the church, doesn't know what the church is. That's his problem. If we know that the church is the called out of God, the men and women that have submitted to God, and in the church God is to be glorified, world without end, Ephesians 3:20-21. Then there can be no thought of approaching God in worship and service apart from the church. And so the place is important for us. And then the prohibitions. God knows that Christians are weak people. Those of you that have lived the Christian life very long know that you will make mistakes on occasion. And when you do, the pain of conscience. Well, God knows that about us. So He says, don't do this, don't do that. He says, do this and do that. So there are prohibitions that apply for Israel and for Christians. So the place and the prohibition. Well, first of all, the place. In Leviticus 17, and the Lord spake unto Moses. I believe that's the very first verse of the first book, first chapter of this book. And the Lord said. That indicated that God wanted to be known. He told people. The very fact that God talks to these people tells them that He wants to be known. He didn't want to be known, He wouldn't have said anything. If you were trying to play hide and seek years ago, you didn't want anybody to catch you. And whoever was trying to catch you would get close. You wouldn't say, "Hey, how you doing?" You would be as quiet as could be. You didn't want to be known. God wanted to be known. So he said, "I'm going to talk to these folks." That indicated also that people could understand what God was saying. If somebody talks to you in a language you don't know, you'll have a hard time figuring out what they're trying to say. Heard about a fellow tried to get some clothespins so his wife could hang the diapers out in Rome. And he went to the store and tried to tell people that didn't speak English what he was looking for in order to get some clothespins so they could hang the diapers up. And it got to be funny before long. Well, if you don't know what a person's talking about, you can't understand him. So God spoke and they could understand that. Notice also that he said, verse 2, "This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded." Now Israel, listen to me, he said. Learn something. If you're going to come to God, you need to listen to these commands, these instructions concerning the place. Notice in verse 4, 5, 6, and 9, he said, "You've got to bring these animals that you are going to offer. You've got to bring it to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation to offer an offering unto the Lord before the tabernacle of the Lord." That's what you're supposed to do. He talks about the ox, the lamb, the goat, and he says that's got to be brought to the door of the tabernacle. That's what you've got to do. That's the place. And he repeats it in at least four verses. Now, pause for a moment and think about that. Would it be impossible for God to say, "Well, just any old place is all right"? Of course it would have been. Would not God's grace have applied as much outside as inside the camp? Would not God's love have been present before the door as well as beside the tabernacle? Well, of course it would have. God is not going to be confined in his omnipotence to this place or that. But he is demonstrating here his greatness as well as his desire for Israel to know his will. And he's also testing these people as to whether in love and reverence and submission they will do as he instructs them. I'll never forget hearing the late Brother Marshall Keeble preach one time in Nashville. Heard him preach many times elsewhere, but this occasion. He made this statement. I wish I could imitate him exactly. But he said, "If God commanded me to run through a brick wall, it would be my job to duck my head and run. And God's responsibility to make the hole." Now you won't find that in any lexicon anywhere about obedience. But folks, that's it. Brother Hardiman, you say, that's not about it, that is it. And God was testing Israel by saying, "You bring that animal up here to the door of the tabernacle." It's not just the animal that he's interested in. He was interested in the mind, the heart of the people. And in compliance with God's will and love and reverence and submission, they'd bring it there. The Lord teaches me to assemble on the first day of the week with the people of God and honor and praise God for a long time. I've tried every Lord's Day to have the first prayer I offer, to thank God that it is the Lord's Day, and His people around the world will be gathering on this day to honor God and rejoice and give praise to His name. I try to keep that in mind on the first day of the week. And I try to think about people all over this world of like precious faith. Well, they're the door of the tabernacle. And for us, the gathering with God's people. Notice also, if a man violated this regulation, verse 4, notice that he says, blood shall be imputed unto that man. It won't cleanse his soul, but he's trifled with what God has said. Trifled with it. I shed the blood, God, but I didn't do it where you told me, so you accept the blood anyway. Oh, no. The blood does not reach God to provide the sacrificial blessing. You offered it not because you wanted to do God's will, but because you wanted to do what you wanted to do. And God knew that about folks. And He said, the blood only benefits you. It doesn't reach God. And further in verse 4, He says, that man shall be cut off from among his people. Sound like a terrible price to pay, doesn't it? But if I am willing to trifle with God and say, in effect, I'm not going to listen to you, who do you think you are, God? You think I'm going to listen to you? Fella missed my... Well, he'd come to class about 5 minutes. He'd leave one day. 6, 7, 8 times, and I stopped the class and went out one day, and I said, now, young man, you come to class, and as soon as the roll call is made, you leave. And I said, I've wondered about what you're doing. Well, he said, I'm not in kindergarten. I said, I'm aware of that. And he said, I'm able to decide whether I want to sit in this class or not. I said, well, you are, up to a point. But when you decided you'd enroll in this class, you decided you'd follow the rules that have to do with this class. Well, he said, I'm just not going to do it. And I said, well, then we got a problem. Because I'm going to have to get you to get permission from the dean so that you can come or leave anytime you want to. Well, he said, I'm not going to do that. I said, well, I am. I'm going to go right now and ask him if he will give you a letter that you can come and go in my class anytime you want. And if he doesn't, then you're going to have to talk to him. Maybe we both better go right now. Oh, no, he said, I don't want to bother the dean. Well, I said, now, hard down, steady nuts. Now, that's not too deep for y'all. The next time you do this, you and I are going to meet around the dean's table and we're going to talk about it. Do we understand each other? He said, I do. It was amazing how well that boy's attitude improved. God is saying the same thing here. You come to the place. Notice also in verse 5, the role of the priest must be observed. You bring it, he says, unto the priest and offer them for peace offerings unto the Lord. You don't disregard the spokesman of God, the priest. You don't decide, well, I don't like that priest. I don't even like the way he combs his hair. And his effort is a little bit skewed. And I don't think I have to listen to him. God said, you better bring it to the priest. You get your heart right. And if the priest is not doing right, leave him to me. And then in verse 6, he said the priest has got to do it right too. He's got to sprinkle this blood upon the altar. And then it will be a sweet savor unto the Lord. Notice that sweet savor. Smells good. I love the smell of roses. Whew, I like that. And even the other day down at Walmart, that tells you a lot about how you shop when you retire. We saw some heather. I don't know whether you've ever seen any heather in Scotland. If you have, that's beautiful stuff. And you smell that aroma, and you can see in your mind Loch Lomond and Edinburgh Castle, the River Tweed and all of that. Well, here God is saying, that's a sweet savor. So there's the place. Then the prohibitions. In verse 7, Israel could not offer sacrifices anymore to demons. The details of what this is about, we don't know. But apparently it had to do with some kind of idolatrous activity. And God is building a kind of a fence around Israel, and he says, listen, you fool around with those demons, and you're going to pervert the worship of God. Don't you do that. Don't do that. Now, a child may not understand why mama says, now, don't you play in that street. He doesn't know a thing in the world about a car. He's no more concerned about getting out in the street than he is about getting out in the living room. But mama knows if he runs out in that street, he's going to get hit and killed or hurt. And she may tell him a time or two, and finally she'll address a certain anatomical area. I told you, don't get in that street. Don't you do it anymore. He might not exactly appreciate that till he's old enough to see what happens when a kid gets hit by a car. Mama's been taking care of him all along. He didn't even know that. God says, don't you get over there and fool with those demons anymore. I've already seen it's happened. You got in trouble with the golden calf. Don't you do it here in the land. You got these remnants of these idolatrous practices on every high. Don't you do that anymore. I'm prohibiting that. And don't argue about that anymore. That's prohibited. Notice also there is the prohibition that applies to the strangers. It'd be interesting to talk about those strangers. These were evidently people that in the New Testament would think of as proselytes. Folks getting ready to live and work among the Jews. Applies to them as well, we're told, down in verse 8. And then in verses 10 through 14, there is the prohibition of blood. Some years ago in Glasgow, I was in a meeting at the Castle Milk Church and was staying with a couple of fine, fine folk, Ina and Jimmy. Jimmy had been a chef in the Royal Navy for 40 years. And I'm telling you, that man could flat cook. Oh, he could cook. First night I was there, he came in and said, your bath is drawn. I know what he's talking about. He meant, you need to take a bath and I'll fix your water. Well, that's the first time anybody ever drawn that water from me. Boy, that felt good. I don't have to turn the water on, get it just right. He fixed those meals wonderful. I mean, he could do it. And then one evening he said, would you like some black pudding for supper? I said, yeah. No, Jimmy, no. He doesn't eat that. And I didn't know what it was. I said, yeah, oh, no, you don't eat that. And I asked the preacher, I said, what are you talking about? He said, that's blood pudding. And she knew that you didn't eat that. But he didn't. Now, God said, you don't eat the blood. Don't do that. Why not? Well, God said the first reason is because my face is against it. That's the first reason. Just the fact in verse 10 that the face of God is against something is enough. You don't have to have two PhDs in Hebrew to understand that. When God frowns on something, that ought to be enough. I finally caught on after two or three applications of a certain, well, it was actually a hedge limb. And when my mama frowned, that meant, get right, boy, or you going to get it. And I can still see that face kind of frowning up and that right eye getting a little bit pinched together and that jaw getting set, and it's about time for her to take this left arm in her left hand and we'd circle the landing field for a few times. And she made it a practice every time my foot hit the ground, she'd put a stick on it. Well, by the time we had circled the landing field 5 or 6 times, I was getting the message good. I learned when mama starts getting that frown on, oh boy, even now, 85 years old, about this high, on a good day, I think I could take her in a fair fight. But when that frown starts, I get a little nervous. I don't think she could catch me and whip me anymore, but I know it'd break her heart. That's why I don't do it when it frowns, comes on. God said, I set my face against that. That's enough. But then in verse 11, he said, life is in the blood. And that life that is poured out in the blood that is on the altar, I will accept as a means of forgiveness, looking forward to the coming of Christ. And you don't even begin to understand that. Not a one of those people knew a thing in the world about Jesus Christ and the Virgin Mary and the birth of Jesus and the death on the cross. They didn't have to know that. God said, you just leave that to me. Ask a fellow one time, how does a telephone work? He was a manager of Southeastern Bell in the Southeast United States. Big dog. He said, preacher, you ain't got sense enough to understand it if I told you. He said, you just go ahead and use it and pay your bill and don't worry. I've been doing it ever since. And it works fine. God didn't have to tell Israel there's going to come a day when the Jews and the Romans will put my son to death for the atonement of your sins. He just said the blood is shed. And that means it's all right. Don't you eat that. The life is in the blood. And he said, verse 12, some of you wouldn't learn it, so he repeats it. He talks about the hunter, and he talks about the violation of it. Quickly in closing, I see the man's already started calling time. I appreciate that. People still tell me about when Brother Gus Nichols was at Fried Hardeman. When he ran overtime, I did everything I could think of to make myself absolutely disappear because I sure didn't want to call him down. But three conclusions. Number one, God's worship is guided by His revealed will. That's true all through the Bible. God says, this is what I want you to do to worship me. Tonight's my wife's birthday supper. I got to go back and be there for that. And we know what she wants. And I can tell you this, she's going to get it. She's made that clear. You think I'm going to get it? You better know I am. Lord, let's be live. God says, this is what I want you to do. Israel said, that's what I'm going to do. Number two, God's will obeyed is a sign of reverence and submission. It's in his heart. Little old boy comes up and puts a dandelion in the hand of his mama and says, Mama, I love you. Get out of here, kid. That's just an old dandelion. There's not a mama in the world that'd do that. Because that little kid is saying, in my heart, you're the queen. You're it, mama. And this little flower means that. She'll keep it perhaps in her heart. God is to be obeyed out of love, out of reverence, and submission. And finally, such submission is not legalism. It's not meritorious. is not putting God in debt. It's the heart of a child of God submitting to God out of love and reverence and the desire to meet God in his heart of hearts and live and serve. I appreciate being here. Glad to see all of you. Wish you well. Come by to see us in Lawrenceburg. If I'm not there, look in the nearest trout hole. Thank you.